going out the door, so I sort of feel relieved we don't have that situation here. We're here talking about financial planning and retirement. If you came expecting to find that golden nugget that you've never heard before, sorry. I'm still looking for that myself.
You're a little hard to hear.
Okay, I love the mic. I'm just going to talk louder then, all right? Okay, my name is John Bolt. I'm the U.S. Managing Director for Christian Schools International, U.S. Employee Benefits. I've been in this role since January 1 of this year. Prior to this, I was employed by the Christian Reformed Church as their Deputy Executive Director and Chief Financial Officer, a role that I held for almost 20 years. I came out of the corporate world before that. I've been in finance, not to be confused with accounting. My career would have been more on Wall Street rather than as a lawyer. So I came up through the finance group, the treasury function, and in fact I was vice president treasurer of the Kellogg Company. Finance there was a little bit more intimidating because the head of the finance committee was Don Rumsfeld. So, you know, when you had to present, it was a little bit more scary. I left Kellogg in 99 and went out to New York. I worked with Twin Laboratories as a CFO and learned a lot about companies that were having difficulties, but I found that that was also a time where God prepares you for what's coming next. Because you start dealing with Kellogg, I didn't really know how to evaluate things because we had as much money as we wanted. When I went out to New York, we were suddenly working with some real limitations. And then when I came to the Christian Reformed Church, yep, limitations is sort of where you begin. And I'm finding that CSI isn't a lot different. So, we're going to talk a little bit about retirement. And I'm going to here to tell you that I'm not the best retirement person. I've only retired 3 times, and I'm turning 71 next month. So early retirement was thought of, came and went. Regular retirement came and went. Last July of 22, I did retire from the CRC. Finally decided, okay, that was it. My wife and I were going to go off and enjoy retirement. And we found out she had cancer. So 30 days, literally 30 days later, she was gone. So I didn't know exactly what God had in mind. I told my kids, you know, maybe I should go back to work. And lo and behold, I get calls from CSI. Would I consider coming here to do the work with the benefits group? Part of what God prepares you for goes way back in time. Employee benefits, they've been called under ERISA. I don't know if you've heard that term. Employee Retirement Income Security Act. Jerry Ford signed that into law August 30th, Labor Day, I guess it was, 1974. And it's kind of fitting that we're here in South Bend because that law was put in place because of Studebaker. When Studebaker went under, so did a pension plan, and the retirees had nothing. Congress said we can't have that. And so they put the change in the laws. So that's about the time I actually started running pension plans. I began with American Natural Resources in the Detroit area and then was hired by Kellogg to run their program. So it was sort of fitting when I went back to the CRC to get involved with the minister's pension and now with you all's pension. So the defined benefit pension plan will be part of our conversation, but we really want to talk about retiring. It's something that we're all planning to do at some point. We're not quite sure when. Some people think it's, you know, got to be on a certain date. You know, I'm going to be 62 and I'm going to retire. Other people say, well, we'll sort of see how it goes. So there's really two things that we got to talk about. What's going to be your financial need in retirement? Because if you're going to start funding something, you better start having an idea of what you're going to fund. And that's really what this planning needs to focus on first. You know, you have goals in retirement. How many people plan to travel in retirement? Most. How many people are going to relocate? You know, my kids live elsewhere. I'm going to go sort of live by them now. What about the unexpected sickness, a family crisis that you hadn't anticipated? You know, the kids get in trouble or something, and suddenly they say, Mom and Dad, I need help. Long-term care? You know, are you going to be able to stay in your own home until some later time? Are you thinking about moving into a retirement community? You know, I think of Holland Home. It's got a progressive program that you can buy into initially, and you move from your own independent living to more group living, and then into assisted living, and finally into nursing. So you can kind of get into that process. Is that something you want? I read an article yesterday about longevity. And this group, Northwest Mutual, went out and they interviewed 500 prospective retirees of all different financial backgrounds. And they asked, how long are you going to live? The average answer was to 81. And they said, that's not the right target. So I'm going to ask the question, how many here are going to live to be 100? All right, we got one. That's actually what you got to start thinking about. I'll give you an example from my family. My father, my great-grandfather passed away in his 60s. My grandfather, I never even knew, he died at 53. My dad was very concerned, I'm going to die early, so he retired on his 56th birthday. He died at 95. He was retired longer than he worked. He always thought that would be a good goal for everybody. He was very fortunate, very blessed, but a lot of times when we start thinking about retirement, we don't necessarily think that it could be quite a long time. Your retirement could easily be 20 to 30 years. And I think you got to start thinking about that a little bit. You got to then think, as I get older, if I get into my 90s, what's my health going to be? What kind of extra needs am I going to have? Am I prepared for that? For example, if you have your finances all set into different brokerage accounts and bank accounts, what happens if you all of a sudden find that you've got Alzheimer's or dementia? Do you have a will in place? Do you have a trust in place? Things you've got to start thinking about almost before you retire. And then finally, even before you retire, do you have good disability coverage? You know, when you go to put those Christmas lights on the gutters and you slip on the ladder, break your back, what's going to happen? So these are all things that you need to think a little bit about. We also need to be thinking about how inflation is going to be impacting us. Right now in the U.S., there's, for people 65 and older, 53% are homeowners with no mortgage. And 25% are homeowners who have some mortgage left. And 22% are renters. If you have your house and you have it paid off, inflation is not a real problem except for things like utilities. But if you have a mortgage, particularly now with rates higher, people are starting to look more and more at adjustable rate mortgages. If you're retired and that rate starts adjusting up, are you still going to be able to keep your house? So you got to think about that if you still have a mortgage or if you think you know, we're going to buy a new house and we're going to take some of the cash to retire and we'll have this mortgage. You got to think about what's the structure. You want to think fixed rate mortgages. If you're a renter, you're really susceptible to inflation because it's whatever the rental market is at that moment. The next thing you got to think about is, well, how much money do I need? And historically, people have said, well, 70 to 80% of your working income should be good for retirement. Well, I'd say that's a big maybe. In fact, the higher your income, the lower that number can be. Because you're not going to be paying certain taxes like Social Security, and you're not going to be saving. You can actually move into a spending mode. So you could go lower. But if you're more into our income, and I'm going to put myself in your group because CSI kind of pays us like teachers, you probably need more than 70 or 80%. Unless you've been very fortunate, your income and your in retirement isn't going to change for your income needs. So you've got to start thinking about that. And then, of course, you've got personalized expenses. I want to travel. Have you got something for that? You know, I want to do certain things for my kids or my grandkids. You've got to start thinking about that. You've got to think about, will your nest egg be enough? Because we're going to talk in a little bit about the three sources of money. And then in future considerations, you know, one thing we find that the inflation is protected from what the government provides, Social Security. But we got to think about, you know, even if inflation is only 5%, and I say only, for those people that are younger, they think, ooh, that's 5, that's bad. I remember when mortgages were 20% because inflation had gotten up double digit. So all different things we got to think about on where we're going to end up. But then let's talk more a little bit about where's the income. And there's going to be really three sources of savings. Here we've labeled it Social Security benefits. I like to think of that as, what's the government going to do for us? And we do hear reports about, oh, Social Security's going broke. You know, by 2034, it won't have any money. Well, the government has one thing that you don't. A printing press. So, literally, I'm not worried about Social Security going broke. Not only could they print, but I'm speculating here, I'm guessing that they will have some kind of legislation to act on the retirement age, similar to what they did some decades ago, when they moved it from 65 to 67. I'm thinking we're going to see something go up to maybe, you got to be 70 for normal retirement. So it won't impact you, but I expect your kids will probably find that that's going to be part of their future. So we have, what's the government doing? Then there's what I call employer-related income. So the CSI, Employee Retirement Plan, Defined Benefit Plan, they froze that in 2019. But that didn't mean the benefit went away. It just didn't grow. So that plan still owes probably 10,000 people payment for the rest of their life at a certain frozen amount. So that's still there. And then, of course, now we've got the 403B. Some places will have a 401K. 403B is a little bit more common in a not-for-profit or a school environment. But a 401K, 403B are almost identical. So if somebody starts saying, well, I've got a 401K, that's pretty close to what a 403B is. So you can think of that as the same. The third block, and this is the one that I think people have to worry about the most, and it's often the least supported, that's what your personal savings have been. So you've got the government, you've got your employer, and then yourself. What are you doing? So Social Security benefits are out there. They've got early retirement benefits and late retirement benefits. To be qualified, you need 40 quarters, so 10 years worth of earnings. I think pretty much everybody will have that. In 2023, the minimum quarter had to be $1,640, so it's a fairly low threshold. It is adjusted to the Consumer Price Index. Matter of fact, they just announced that the increase in December is going to be 3.2%. Last year it was over 8. So Joe Biden is probably happy that the number is coming down, but it's still 3.2%. And so that will improve that retirement income for anybody in payment status. You can claim benefits as early as age 62. But they're reduced for every month before your normal retirement age. Now, some of you have normal retirement age of probably 66, 66 and some months, up to age 67 for the younger people. So if you said, well, I'm going to start at 62, that's 5 years worth. So that's a pretty big haircut to take. The other thing to remember is if you start receiving Social Security payments and you're still working and you're before your normal retirement age, the dollars that you make reduce how much Social Security pays. So even though you've said, I want to start, if you find yourself working, you'll start losing benefit. So you got to be very careful if you're going to start an early benefit payout. And as I said, normal retirement age may well be adjusted in the future. Quite frankly, I think that's really the only way that Congress is going to find palatable to fix the Social Security problem. But the big problem is we don't have enough young people. Now, if you wait past your normal retirement age, the benefit can go up. It goes up 8% for every year you wait. So if your normal retirement age is 66 and you wait till 70 to start, you get 32% more. And think about that, that's 32% for the rest of your life that you get that extra bump. So that can be really valuable to think about waiting. In fact, some people will tell you it's almost better if you retire before age 70 to start living on your savings and just delay starting the Social Security. Now we have the employer pensions, and we are going to have a good Q&A session here. So if you've got questions, I'm planning that there's a lot of give and take here yet. So we talked about there's the defined benefit pension plan CSI provides. There's what they call defined contribution plans. And defined benefit, defined contribution is just as it says, what does the plan document detail? So for the CSI plan, it really tells you what you're going to get. With the 403B and the 401K, the defined contribution, you know what you're going to put in. What you get out, dependent on you. So with the Christian School Pension Plan, as I said, the benefit was frozen in 2019. You needed to participate for 5 years before you were entitled to a lifetime benefit. People say that's when you vested. So after 5 years, you were vested. So by this point, pretty much everybody is vested. Once you're vested, you can't lose it. So even if you stop teaching and you decide, you know what, I'm going to become an interior decorator, when you hit normal retirement, that benefit is still there for you. So I suggest that if you have questions about what you're going to get, that you can stop by our table out here, and we have our specialist. Becky's back in the back seat right now. And she's the one who can help do some calculating for you. or you can just go to our website, and they'll help you determine what's coming from that plan. We also offer the 403B. It's up to your individual schools as to whether or not they're going to participate. If your school doesn't, I encourage you to encourage the administration to join. There are specific investment opportunities in there. You get to choose how you want your money invested. If you pull the money out of that plan before you're 59 and a half, there's a tax penalty. Federal government says, no, you can't take it out early, because if you do, not only will we tax it, but we'll add 10% to the tax rate. So that can be pretty painful. Employers may contribute to the 403B, and it's usually some kind of a match. So, for example, your school may say, well, I'll put up to 3% or 5% of your pay, but you've got to have it dollar-for-dollar match. Generally, they also allow you then to contribute beyond that up to what the IRS limits are. And those are pretty significant. So you want to be able to determine how much can I really participate. That last piece actually is a good segue into our personal savings, because to the extent you contribute to the 403B is part of your personal savings, particularly if you're participating beyond what that match is. And think about it, if they offer you a 5% match and you don't contribute, you're just leaving money on the table. And I don't think many of us want to do that. But the personal savings is often the weakest link, and it can be the most critical. It can take multiple forms. We suggest if you don't have a financial advisor, you think about getting one. My wife was surprised when I told her that I thought the two of us should get one. She says, well, why do I need that? And I said, well, I think I could wing it, but if something happened to me, I don't know what she would do, and vice versa. It also gives you a tremendous ability to have a third opinion. So you get your opinion, your spouse's opinion, and then theirs. You want to make sure that you just take theirs as an opinion and still be comfortable with whatever decisions you're making. But the personal savings can be your best defense against inflation, because you can keep that money growing even after, you know, you've determined your retirement dates. Time is actually one of also the most important parts to personal savings. Let me just tell you a little example to give you an illustration. There are two brothers, twins, born the same day. And on their 20th birthday, the one twin said, you know what? I need to start creating personal savings. I'm going to put $2,000 a year into my savings account, and I'm going to invest it, and I'm going to let it keep growing. And the other brother says, I'm not really interested. 10 years later, they meet on their birthday again. And the first brother says, well, I've been doing this for 10 years. I'm going to stop. The other brother says, yeah, boy, I'm really kind of envious of you. I'm going to start. So at age 30, the second brother starts, and at age 65, they meet up again. So the first brother put in $20,000. The other brother put in $70,000. On their 65th birthday, who has more money?
The one who started earlier.
The first brother. Even though he only put in for those 10 years, those extra years of compounding are tremendously important. So I tell people, try to start this as early as you can. Now somebody's going to say, but wait a minute, you know, I'm not 30 anymore. Well, that's true, but I can't back up the clock. So if you haven't started, today's the day you should think about it. Get it underway. There are other ways to save too. We talk about Roth and pre-tax. If you put your money, Roth was a particular congressperson who put in a provision that if you're willing to pay the tax on the money before you put it in the plan, when you finally let it grow and take it out, you didn't have to pay the tax then. And for some people, this could be a real boom. Some people will tell you, but you know, I kind of like not having to pay tax on that money today. Because think about it, if I've got $1,000 and I'm in the 20% tax bracket, you know, for my $1,000 of earnings, I only have $800 to put in savings versus $1,000. But in retirement, then you've got to say, well, what will my tax bracket be? There's no good single answer, but it's something to think about. Roth versus going pre-tax. I must say, in my personal situation, I've done both. And I know I've talked to people who say Roth is the only way to go, and other people say, no, just go pre-tax. It all comes down to your personal situation, and this is where a financial planner is really important to be able to talk to. Consider the financial impact before retiring early. What about health care premiums before you become Medicare eligible? Early retirement can result in lower pension benefits, particularly out of the 403B or 401K, simply because you've not had those extra years to let it grow. Your Social Security can be reduced if you before normal retirement. And then you also could end up, if you take early retirement from the CSI plan, it's reduced if it's before age 65. So all things to consider. So in summary, your financial well-being is really your responsibility. You need to think about the three components of retirement income, but you also need to be thinking about what do I want to be able to do in retirement? What am I funding for? And now is the time to plan. Don't wait. My kids say, but yeah, I didn't do it yesterday, Dad. I don't know what to say. My line to them is, what'd you have for dinner last night? Or what are you going to do today to change that? I can't worry about what happened yesterday. All I can say is, here I am. What am I going to do to move forward? So, what I'd like to do is really open it up for questions. I don't know that I'll have all the right answers, but I can certainly express opinions. I will say the one thing on personal investing, though, before we go any further. When you meet with your financial advisor, one of the things you're going to have to focus on is what is your willingness to take risk? You know, people say, oh, the stock market, that's a real roller coaster. Well, it is if you're looking at what happens in the next 3 months. But if I want to say what's going to happen in the next 10 years, maybe that risk isn't so bad. It'll go up and down, but generally, stocks tend to increase. You know, is the bond funds good? Well, when interest rates are high, you're making good coupon. If rates drop, the value of the bond grows. Rates go back up, they can drop. So there's risk everywhere. You really got to say, what is your personal ability and comfort level? The last thing you want to do is sit there at night and worry about this. If you're worried about it, you're probably not doing something right. It doesn't mean you shouldn't be a little bit concerned. But don't lose sleep. Some people say, oh, this roller coaster, I can't stand it. The other piece that I have of advice I would give out is, there is no such thing as market timing. Some people say, oh yes, the market went down today, so I think this is a good day to invest. Markets go up and down all the time. And in fact, if you look over long periods of time, most market movement happens in a very short window. And it happens abruptly. It's not linear. It's very erratic. And if you happen to miss one bump, your return can go totally away. So if you decide you want to invest in something, think about the long term. Don't try to market time. of all the professional investors I've ever worked with, I've never found any who can market that. Questions?
You talked about the importance of figuring out how much income you'll need in retirement. How do you go about calculating that number when you don't know when you're going to retire and you don't know what inflation's going to be between now and then?
Well, I think there's two things to think about. If you don't know when you're going to retire, you still have the idea you are going to retire. And think about when I'm retired, whenever that is, what I want to do. I mean, am I going to be able to go visit the grandchildren? Do I want to travel? Do I want to volunteer someplace, like with World Renew, and go, you know, fix up hurricane damage? Am I going to want to, you know, visit my roots in whatever country you happen to come from? What do I want to do? And I think that'll give you a little idea of the lifestyle you want. And if you're not sure when you're going to retire, you can look at, well, what would that lifestyle cost? And based on what I have today, how well funded would that be? And that might actually tell you a little bit about when retirement might be a little bit more feasible. You know, some people say, well, you know, got to retire early. When I was with the Kellogg Company, we had a rule of 85. If your years of service and age equaled 85, you go out full retirement. And there was guys 55 years old, gone. You know, and I always thought, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Well, maybe not. So I think you've got to sort of get an idea of what you want your retirement to be, and then figure out, well, what kind of an income would I need to do that? And am I structured for that today? Does it mean I should probably think about working another couple of years? Does it think I, you know, maybe I need to adjust my dream a little bit too, of what retirement's like? But I think there's no magic formula. You know, you can't open a book and say, you fill in these six columns and I've got it. It's, everybody's got the different view.
What do you do with it? That's helpful. What do you do with inflation on that? Because if inflation for the next 20 years is 2% versus 5%, how do you calculate?
Well, while you're working, salaries generally move with inflation.
Okay.
I mean, I can tell you right now, there are going to be conversations at school where they say, inflation is up, all our expenses are up, and I'm not sure we can give you very good raises this year. But over time, that sort of smooths out. So if I had to say, where is inflation going to be long term, I'd probably use between 2 and 3%. Don't forget, your Social Security will be adjusted for it. Your personal savings, earnings, should also reflect that. So if you've got a good diversified portfolio, and again, get a financial advisor to tell you, you know, the old idea, well, I'll put 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds, depends on what your personal situation is. But the advisor can talk you through it, talk to you about maybe some other investment alternatives. But your personal savings generally will move with inflation as well. So it's the one thing that isn't is what the CSI pension has. That's locked. I'm getting a pension from the Kellogg Company. It hasn't moved in the last 5 years since I've started. And it won't move in the next 50 years while I grow to be 125.
Could you explain how healthcare insurance works with CSI, whether you take it at early retirement or at retirement, and how does that work with Medicare? Do you still get carried by CSI?
CSI does have a Medicare program. I'm not currently in it because I wasn't here last October. Next week Wednesday, I guess, they'll have me sign up for it. So it's a Medicare supplement. When you turn 60, when you start Social Security, if you work past 65 and your employer has insurance for you, you don't necessarily have to start Medicare. Generally, though, at 65, and that's the other thing, Medicare normal retirement is age 65, even if Social Security doesn't start till 67. So you can start Medicare that early. And Medicare has basically four parts. You got A and B, which is doctor and hospital, and then you got D, which is prescriptions, and then you have C, which is all these Medicare Advantage plans, Medicare supplement, and those are the pieces that you can really sort of look at. And CSI does offer, what, two different Medicare? Let Becky kind of speak to that one.
Yeah, there's group plans and individual plans, but you're grabbing me a minute. She's much more fluent in that than I am.
Why don't, if you would, that'd be great.
Sure.
We'll get a healthcare specialist in here. But the CSI, as long as you're with your school, you can have, you know, whatever the school program is. But in retirement, we do have a retirement program.
What about if you retired at 62? Like early retirement, can you be covered under CSI?
I'm going to let Amy answer that when she comes in.
All right.
We'll hold that. Other questions?
My husband and I have a pension, and then it's switched right to the 403B. So when you try to calculate how much you're going to need, you're like, oh, this is a good amount for a nest egg. How do you calculate the value of the pension versus, like, balancing pension versus investments?
Well, the pension plan is going to give you a certain dollar amount per month.
Right.
So that's the stream that you have there. Your 403B is going to be more of a lump sum. And there are ways to annuitize that lump sum so that it becomes also a monthly amount. A financial advisor can easily apply some factors to kind of give you what that is. But think of your 403B separate from the CSI employee pension. Because the pension is a monthly amount, the 403B is a lump sum that, you know, you can convert to an annuity, or you can just leave it in a lump sum and then withdraw it as you need during retirement. It sort of depends on it. But think of that as part of your nest egg. The old rule of thumb was you could withdraw about 4% a year. I'm not sure that that's quite holds, but if you think 4 or 5% a year would come out, how long will your money last? It's also dependent on how it's invested. Now, does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I've seen this thing called, it's Green's formula, R-E-I-N. Is that like a thing that people follow?
I'm not familiar with
okay.
it, but.
To try to figure out the value of your pension in like real dollars, imagining what the equivalent is.
All right. Some people also tell you to take that pension stream and discount it because of the inflationary impact. I tend to ignore that a little bit, hoping that my Social Security, my personal savings, will cover the inflation that the pension doesn't. Amy, we have questions on health care.
We had Medicare questions.
Yes.
What are they? Go ahead.
Well, I was just curious how healthcare works in retirement, whether you can take it at early retirement, and then how it works with Medicare. Like, are people still carrying CSI insurance when they're 80 years old or whatever?
Yes.
Like,
so if you would retire before age 65, you can do early retirement health insurance, which is the same health and dental coverage that you have now through your school. The disability coverage and the life insurance end at retirement regardless of what your age is. So say your school offers three different health plans. If you are an early retiree, you would have those same three health plan options that the active employees at your former school do. Okay? pay, and you've got the same exact dental coverage. Once you turn 65, you enroll in Medicare A and B, and then CSI offers Medicare Advantage plans. There are two group Medicare Advantage plans, which only CSI retirees can get. And those have a richer benefit than some of the individual priority health plans, or other plans as well, or Blue Cross, Aetna, whatever insurance company you're looking at. CSI also, we are insurance agents, so we also can offer the priority health individual plans for you. That's kind of, the group versus the priority individual is kind of comparing apples to oranges. The group plans have a higher monthly premium, but also then richer benefits, like a lower monthly out-of-pocket, no prescription donut hole, a richer dental plan. The individual plans, several of them are free or very low monthly premium, but those have a higher maximum out-of-pocket. Say you have a hospitalization, you'd end up paying quite a bit more out-of-pocket in an individual plan than in the group plan. So it's kind of, are you happier or more comfortable paying higher premium up front knowing you've got more robust coverage, or are you more comfortable saving that monthly premium, paying much less with an individual plan, but knowing you have to have that nest egg should you have a big surgery or a cancer diagnosis or something like that. So, and we work very closely with you when you're getting ready to retire. Let us know a couple months before, or even if you're just thinking, do I want to retire this year or next year? Give our office a call or send us an email, and we can send you summaries of coverage and cost and start helping you think through which is the best option for you. So, most people do have something beyond Medicare A and B.
Amy used the term the drug donut hole.
Yep.
Does everybody know what that is?
They usually don't. That is something that most commercial health plans have, and it applies to prescriptions. You have a copay every time you pick up your prescription, and once the actual cost of your prescription coverage, not the cost you pay, but the cost the drug really is, once that hits, I think it's around $4,700 right now, once that hits that amount, then you end up paying more every time you pick up your prescription until you hit another level. You've fallen into the donut hole after that $4,700, and you come back out of the donut hole, I think around $6,900, and then you go back to paying that lower cost. The CSI group plans don't have a donut hole, so whatever your copay is, you pay it the same year, all year, regardless of how expensive your drugs really are. A lot of people, that does not affect if you're generally in good health, but if you've got some chronic condition, diabetes or even a cancer diagnosis, chemo is considered a prescription, those donut holes come into play in that instance. So that's another advantage of the group plan versus the individual. But then there is a higher monthly premium to kind of help waylay or offset those costs. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on overfunding an HSA before retirement so that you can use those funds and get tax benefits that aren't low?
If you can afford it, do it.
Yeah. That's what I did. And yeah, I've got quite a bit of money sitting in my HSA. An HSA is a health savings account. And if you have a high deductible health care plan, you can open an HSA. You have to go to your bank and they'll set one up for you. Sometimes your employer puts some money in, but you can put money in, and once you get over a certain age, they have what they call catch-up contributions. So you can put an extra $1,000 in that year. I heavily funded my HSA, and since I'm now on Medicare, I no longer can put any more money in, but my HSA will probably last me the next 15 years. So I'm a big proponent of maxing that out if you can.
Other than medical expenses, too, after a certain age.
Once you're on Medicare, you can use it for Medicare premiums. So like the Medicare Advantage premium or the Medicare Part B has a premium as well. You can use it to pay those also.
And HSA, in essence, is an IRA once you get past retirement?
Yes.
But if you use the money for something other than medical, it's taxed. The beauty of the HSA is you put your money in before tax, and if you use it for medical, it comes out before tax again. Mm-hmm. So in essence, you eliminated the tax on that altogether. But that money is yours, and so in retirement, now I say in retirement, because like your 403B, if you take it out before a certain age, not only do you get to pay the tax man, but you get to pay the excise tax on top of it. So, other questions?
Can someone carry CSI health insurance if they take early retirement but then work part-time somewhere else?
Mm-hmm. Yep. As long as you're not working for a CSI school more than whatever their eligibility level is, which is usually 50% full-time. As long as you're working less than that or working for a non-CSI employer, stay with us. Yep.
Other questions? Well, thank you very much.